Colonel Rob Maness has a lifelong record of providing dedicated service to this nation. Having worked his way up from the enlisted ranks to full colonel, he served our country for more than 32 years. He has served as a bomber squadron commander, bomb disposal technician, Joint Chiefs of Staff Operations Officer, assisted the National Security Team with the campaign plan for the global war on terrorism. He authored the first theater nuclear war plan and served as the vice commander of America's largest airborne intelligence wing. Colonel Rob Maness is a true American hero. This is Rob Maness Live.
Hi, and welcome to Vet Resources in 5, where we talk about a veteran resources in 5 minutes or less. Can you tell us a little bit about the Veterans Club and what your mission is?
Yeah, so our mission is to provide connection, healing, recovery, housing assistance, and vocational training for service members, veterans, and their families. Our most known program, our nationally recognized program, is Equine Facilitated Mentoring. It's a form of equine therapy where we use horses in order to help veterans and their families, and even active duty, heal through horsemanship and through peer support and clinical support from our partners.
Friends, welcome back to the Rob Maness Show. It's Whistleblower Wednesday, and we're live on Worldview Tube and X Spaces simulcast. Today, we're exposing the weaponization of the DOJ and the Veterans Affairs Department against one of America's true heroes. As you just saw, even the VA itself put Jeremy Harrell on their show because of the powerful work he was doing helping veterans heal. Jeremy Harrell's an Iraq combat veteran who came home with severe PTSD and traumatic brain injury. The VA rated him permanently disabled at 70% plus individual unemployability. Remember that term, individual unemployability. His own VA mental health providers encouraged him to volunteer as part of his therapy. And in 2019, he founded Veterans Club Incorporated, a faith-based nonprofit helping thousands of veterans and first responders overcome PTSD, TBI, substance abuse, and homelessness, and I'm sure prevented some suicides too. He served as the unpaid volunteer chief executive officer. No salary, no paycheck, just a disabled veteran giving everything he had to help his brothers and sisters. For that service, he was named Kentucky Veteran of the Year, inducted into the Kentucky Veterans Hall of Fame, honored in the congressional record by Senator Rand Paul, and personally congratulated by President Donald J. Trump. But the Biden DOJ came after him anyway. They indicted this man for theft of government funds simply for receiving his VA disability benefits while volunteering full-time. He was convicted, sentenced to 6 months in federal prison, 6 months of home confinement, and ordered to pay $207,000 in restitution that he cannot afford. This is what weaponization looks like. Targeting of a combat veteran for volunteering too much and being effective. Jeremy is also a Billy Graham Rapid Response Team chaplain and a strong conservative voice. And today, the fight for what is right continues. Jeremy, welcome back to the Rob Maness Show.
Thank you for having me, sir. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, you know, first time you were on, I didn't use that clip from the VA, but I think this is very appropriate. You and I both support a group called Veteran Action, and there will be a clip in the show from their founder, Mark Lucas, here in a segment or two. But it's just ironic, so I wanted to give it some press and give you a chance to talk about it. But first, you know, the first time you were on, we focused mainly on your case. Tell folks how you got injured. And that experience that happened on your combat deployment?
Yeah, so, you know, the TBI was from blast, from mortar rounds, but also it was a culmination of blast throughout, you know, my career in the military. And one thing they're starting to find out now through research, and I just come off of a three-month treatment program down at the Shepherd Center in Atlanta, Georgia. They have a program where they focus on military, but also other government agencies like FBI, CIA, other alphabet agencies that that you know have TBIs as well. But even training over the course of many years of explosives and firing weapons can create traumatic brain injuries. So you know there's veterans out there and even active duty military who are out there today still serving who probably have that and may not know it. And so I went years before I was ever diagnosed with it because it just, you know, everybody contributed everything to PTSD because there's a lot of overlap in symptoms. And because PTSD is much more common and it's kind of a buzz acronym, right? In the veteran community, that's kind of what they rely on. And so, so I learned a lot about, you know, how those blasts, you know, how they affect the brain and then how the brain affects, you know, your whole body. And so, that's, you know, when I worked at the detention centers in Iraq, particularly Abu Ghraib, there were multiple times where there was mortar rounds fired in. And so that's one way. And then I had multiple TBIs, and then there were other incidents that weren't involved in combat where I had concussions that, you know, once you have a TBI, it's important to note that it's anyone that comes after that, it's very easy to get worse. And so I've had about three or four TBIs since the initial one, since my time in Iraq. One was an ATV accident later, maybe around 2018, that wasn't contributed to the military, but it was exasperated because of the ones that I had in the military. So I'm still dealing with the effects of that. So that's how that occurred. PTSD obviously was from the whole deployment, right? From you know, just seeing the things that we saw, the experiences that we had, but you know, it's also the environmental part of that. You know, a lot of people focus on, you know, the rounds firing down range. They focus on the gunfights. And it, ultimately, that is very traumatic because, you know, when we train over here, we don't think about, we don't really get fired back at, you know, when we're shooting rounds down range at pop-up targets. Yeah. We don't experience that. But the other part of that is you know, the environmental factors of that, being out in the middle of a extremely hot desert, living in accommodations that aren't so nice, that aren't so comfortable. For long periods of time, being away from family, being away from your children, all those things culminated together can create a traumatic response in your body. And so there's so much more to PTSD and to TBI than just, you know, the gunfights and just, you know, what we think of when we hear in the news and things like that.
Yeah. You know, one of the very few things that I actually talk about the NFL, National Football League, in a positive way now is their work on concussions and TBI, and especially the cumulative effects. One of the things I've learned working with being on the board of directors for military veterans advocates, especially, is the combination of long-term TBI, repetitive TBIs, the cumulative effects of that when overlaid on the PTSD, you actually have different types of symptoms than if you just had PTSD. It's right. A very different type of reaction, depending on how severe the TBI is. So it's something that we've got to continuously assess and look at and do research on to, you know, get to the solution as quickly as possible. And speaking of solutions, you were on the VA podcast there to talk about the club that you created as a volunteer. And I'm sorry, I laugh. I'm not laughing at Jeremy, folks. I have to chuckle sometimes. It's my protective reaction to keep me from yelling about the VA, you know, or anybody else that's that treats people poorly, you know. So your club, remind folks how you set it up, what its basic functions are, and then what's it doing today.
Yeah. So, you know, when you think about all that's come down from this whole incident, you know, Veterans Club, the way that we started is, you know, through the course of my own recovery, going to I've been to over 12 programs for veterans around the country to try to figure out how to manage the symptoms of PTSD and traumatic brain injury and things like that, and the transition issues. And over the course of going to these programs, one thing that I kept hearing, that the overarching theme was, you know, I don't necessarily miss the job in the military, but what I do miss is the camaraderie. I miss being with other veterans and other military service members. And so I thought, well, wait a minute. We don't have to, you know, we don't have to be in uniform to have that same level of bonding and camaraderie. And so I thought, well, what if I just start a private Facebook group to have a little bit of confidentiality, and maybe we can get six or seven veterans together once a month with our families and have a cookout. I mean, that was literally how Veterans Club started. And it sounds really simple. But I think a lot of times we overthink things, and that was proof, because, you know, we took off and 3 years later, we get invited to Washington, D.C. as the Veteran Service Organization of the Year and win a National Patriot Award. And we end up with five nationally recognized programs. But the point is I never had a vision of growing this organization the way that it grew. It just organically happened. Mm-hmm. And really, my faith comes into play here when I say that God showed favor to what I was doing, because it was pure and it was authentic and it was genuine. There was no incentive for me other than get to watch improvement in the lives of folks who served this country, getting to see families come together and getting to see people heal. That was the greatest reward that I've ever received. And it's more important to me than money has ever been. And you know, and throughout the mission, you know, for the folks who were open to it, I got to share the gospel with them, right? When they would look at me and say, Jeremy, how do you do this? How do you operate the organization? I could say, well, let me tell you who really does it. And I can have that conversation. And really that was the reward. And so, you heard it in the video, our you know, most famous program, I guess, is the Equine Facilitated Mentoring Program. And that's where we use horses. We're in Kentucky, you know, so it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And we use horses to really start hard conversations. You know, it's much easier to talk about your worst day when you're brushing a horse in front of another veteran. And that, you know, we ended up, you know, being one of the top five, you know, fastest growing nonprofits in the country. And we're still operating today. And, you know, the funny thing about, you know, this whole legal issue and the whole situation with the organization is, you know, that they, you know, they condemned me basically saying that that I was doing all this work and all this stuff. And in reality, this organization has kept running even when I was incarcerated. And it's still running today. And I can assure you that I haven't been nearly as involved as I wanted to be. You know, I get phone calls and I advise. And you know, now that I'm through with the sentence of the legal part, I'll be more involved. But the point is it never was just the Jeremy Harrell Show. We do have a board of directors. We do have a board of advisors. We have hundreds of volunteers. But, you know, the point was, it wasn't about any of that. They didn't care about any of that. They just wanted me. And so that's kind of where we are today. But we're still operating. We're still getting grant money. We still have, you know, generous donors. And we're still changing lives. And that's the most important thing for me. But you saw the video with the VA. And the reason why you see a video with the VA, and, you know, and for people out there, it's not easy to get the VA to partner with a non-government organization.
Yeah.
So that just shows you the level of trust that the VA had in me and our organization. It's just really bizarre that they all of a sudden become the complainant.
Yeah, it's very you kind of underplayed that a little bit. It is almost impossible to get the VA to partner with a non-government organization, nonprofit that helps veterans. I mean, that I've been a part of groups that have tried to do that and they've been denied each and every time, because usually what we're working on, unless it's direct therapy, like what you guys are doing, which is great and fantastic. If it's legal stuff, like what we were doing, we were actually in court with the VA and they didn't like that because they lost.
Right.
Anyway, we got to take a break, Jeremy. When we come back, We'll show that little clip from Mark Lucas's group, okay. Better in Action. And I want to talk and get your perspective on what's going on today, especially what you're seeing and hearing about community care and how we need to shore that up and get it fixed, really, because it's broken. Be right back with Jeremy Harrell.
Take a look at the water you just poured. It looks clean. It tastes fine. But what's really in it? Lead, fluoride, arsenic, chlorine, pesticides, PFAS forever chemicals, pharmaceutical residues, and bacteria. Every single day, these toxins flow straight from your tap into your glass, into your family. It's time for Century H2O from Worldview Water. Century H2O is the ultimate water treatment technology, designed to remove harmful toxins, balance your water's pH, and enrich it with essential minerals like calcium and magnesium, the way nature intended. From commercial-scale systems to whole-house filtration to crisp, delicious drinking water right at your kitchen sink and shower, Century H2O delivers cleaner, healthier water everywhere you need it. No plumber, no tools, no plumbing knowledge required. Perfect for homes, apartments, rentals, RVs, refrigerators, and more. Because everyone deserves access to clean, healthy water. Visit worldviewwater.net. That's worldviewwater.net.
America's heroes deserve more than waiting lines and broken promises.
We're allowing our veterans to get access to the best medical care available.
President Trump opened the door to real health care choice. But Washington politicians put bureaucracy before veterans. Congress must restore and protect that freedom. Pass the Veterans Access Act and give our heroes the care they earn.
Nobody deserves it more than our veterans.
Paid for by Veteran Action.
Welcome back to the Rob Manis Show. It's Whistleblower Wednesday. My guest today is disabled combat veteran Jeremy Harrell, who's the founder of the Veterans Club Incorporated out of Kentucky. Had a weaponized DOJ and VA Inspector General's office used against him to send him to prison. Jeremy, you know, that little ad right there, I wanted to use that because it's appropriate for current events. The VA still has a lot of broken parts, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a lot of holes that need to be filled in the Veterans Affairs Administration. And, shout out to our friend Mark Lucas with Veteran Action. He's been hard charging, trying to get these bills passed, especially the Veterans Bill of Rights and the Take Care of a Veterans Act, which is super important. That includes the Major Richard Starr Act. That includes about 60 partisan bills. And, you know, he's working really hard. And these are things that we need. I mean, we constantly see, especially the community care. You know, I just saw something the other day where a gentleman had, you know, couldn't get into the VA for, I think it was 13 weeks. And he had to come out of pocket, right, to go to the doctor because he was having such severe symptoms and ended up with cancer. And that's just unacceptable, right? To have to wait 13 weeks to get an appointment. That's just one case. You can just imagine the hundreds of cases. And then when you look at the mental health side of things, and this is unfortunate, I hate to talk about it, but I think we have to, is that veterans are going to VA hospitals and taking their own lives because to send a message to the administration that they're not getting the care that they need from the mental health side. So there's a lot of things we need to do to fix the system.
Now, have you been in the mental health system on the VA side? What was your experience in that?
Yeah, so I've been in the VA mental health system since I think around 2008, and you know it's really individual therapist based. You know, it's just like anything else. You know, you have some good therapists, you have some bad ones, but you know some of the methods that they use. I believe are extremely outdated, which is why one of the programs at Veterans Club is the Equine Facilitated Mentoring. It's an alternative approach to therapy, which is also included in the Take Care of a Veterans Act, right? It's that's one thing that they're talking about doing research on these things. But you know, every veteran's different. You got to have more things that you can offer versus instead of prolonged exposure, CBT, and the standard talk therapy. So the problem with it is you know, I could go in there for an hour, and we can open up that can or Pandora's box is what I call it, and I can start talking about my hardest days, and then after that hour, I'm sent home. The therapist is waiting to see another veteran. But what do I do with all of that, right? What do I do with everything that I just conjured up? Well, now I have to take a 2 or 3 days or maybe even a week to try to settle down. But there's danger in that time frame, right? If I have no one who can calm me down, and that's something we need to focus on. We need to focus on the aftercare. And one thing that I've noticed in the VA system is there's no one who calls you later on that week to check on you after you've just went through that intense therapy session. And I think that's a shortcoming. But I do think, depending on which VA you go to, which shouldn't be the case, they should all be consistent, that they're trying different things to get better. But I believe that there's so much inconsistency. And I think that's a leadership issue. And a training issue. And my hope is that Secretary Collins can get his program managers and his directors through the VA system all on the same page so that there can be a consistent rollout of good training to make sure whether I go to the VA in Louisville, Kentucky, or I go to the VA in Mississippi, it's all the same. We should get the same level of care. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been my experience too. I mean, it's different. And usually it is a mental health provider, the specific provider, the indicator usually that provides that disparity in outcomes. The other thing is they still use and are reliant on the SSRIs. And I think I honestly think that they believe the SSRIs are what take care of you after you conjure up all that stuff, which we know. That all that medication has big warnings on it for side effects that include at the very top can increase suicidal ideation. It's just never made any common sense to me. Hopefully, I hope before this president leaves, we can make some headway on that and get to some common sense solutions that don't include those.
Yeah, you know, and here's the thing, unfortunately, since going to the VA back in 2008 and being diagnosed with PTSD and taking medicines, I've been prescribed over 21 medications for mental health, everything from antipsychotics to SSRIs. And I will tell you that I use the phrase, it's robbing Peter to pay Paul, because you know, you're trying to fix one thing, but you're creating other problems. And so if I'm trying to fix the mental, then I'm having some physical issues because of the side effects of the medicine. And so it's just a cyclical effect that you never feel better one way or another. You got to pick your heart, I guess. And so that's why I'm so excited about this Abogaine treatment. And I did recently have a meeting with Brian Hubbard, with Americans for Abogaine. And I'm very excited about that conversation and very excited to hopefully soon go through that process myself to where I can really speak intelligently about how it impacted me. But I'm looking forward to that. And you know, what's good about the Abogaine is it's a one and done situation. And you don't have to be on these horrific medicines for the rest of your life. And so yeah, I agree with you. We can't just, here's the deal. You're just masking symptoms. You're not getting to the root cause and the source of the problem. And I just think that's the cop out, you know, is let's just feed medication. But it also keeps you coming back. Right. And these pharmaceutical companies are in the business of making money. So
that's true. And they're big government contracts, very big government contracts.
That's right.
And all of that that play here. What is the uniqueness about Ibogaine? I'll be honest, I haven't really studied it much, but I've heard the treatment's coming. What is the uniqueness about it that makes it better?
Well, you know, number one, it's controlled, and there's someone there, medically that can, that's with you throughout that process. And you go through the traumatic experience, and you get to kind of process it. And again, you got someone there the whole step of the way. You're not just taking a medication and left to your own devices. And it's really bad for the veterans when it comes to medication for the veterans who live alone. Nothing's worse than an isolated veteran. I still believe that isolation is the number one killer of veterans in our country. With the Avogain treatment, you know, you're on site with folks and you're there for a period of time in which you're monitored closely. And you're not just given, you know, the some people who push back say, you know, these are psychedelics, these are drugs. Well, it's not recreational use. These are controlled. These are, you're only getting a medicinal use. You're only getting so much to fix the problem. And so, but once you get through that, and it's not a fun process. It's from what I understand and what I've read and what I've heard about is that it's very difficult and it's not a walk in the park, but again, once you get through that, well, then you feel better and it's over an 80% improvement immediately. I'll take those odds any day over some sort of pill. That may do something momentarily, but it could also, it's killing my liver or it's killing my stomach or it's creating digestive issues that most veterans we probably have anyway. So I'm a huge advocate for anything alternative anyway, anything that we get from the earth that God has provided versus something that man made where they sell a bunch of it for a bunch of money. That's just my perspective.
Yeah. A recent study just came out, a peer-reviewed study about the long-term effects of SSRIs, these physical symptoms that heretofore I've been told, it was told they were temporary. Now it looks like a lot of them are permanent if you were on the medication long enough. So that's another reason to step away from that. What are you on the community care issue? What are you hearing, Jeremy, about the gaps in that? I've gone through the process myself once, and it took 3 months to get an appointment that should have taken 5 minutes. Three months. And it was only with me calling in several times to follow up that I would have gotten the appointment anyway.
Yeah. You know, That's true, and here's the other side of that is, you know, when I was down in Georgia, I had an issue where I felt like I needed to go to the emergency room. Mm-hmm. I went to the emergency room and sought treatment. Ended up, you know, getting discharged, and you know, with some medication, things like that, and today I get calls from a debt collector. Because the VA hasn't paid the hospital for that visit. And here's the thing, here's the other frustrating thing. Before I could go to the emergency room, now luckily mine wasn't a life or death situation. It was an emergency, but it wasn't, it wasn't too critical. You have to call the VA and they give you an 800 number. You have to call them. They ask you a ton of questions, many of them in which you don't know, like some sort of code that the hospital has to give to the VA. And then you have to wait until they tell you that you can go, that they will pay for it. And then when you go, you think, okay, finally I'm here. They're going to pay for it. And then in fact, they don't. And then months later, you get these bills in the mail. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, you have debt collectors calling you and it could interfere with your credit report, right? And so that's what I'm currently going through now. Well, this is the problem. I think the first problem is if someone needs to go to the emergency room, they should be able to do that. You shouldn't have to call and get approval to go to the emergency room. It should be just like going to a VA. That's number one. But from your standpoint, for the time frame in which you can get community care, it shouldn't take 3 months. In fact, the reason why that was designed is if you can't get an appointment at the VA within 30 days, the whole point is to refer you out so that you can get an appointment. For you to have to wait months, it defeats the purpose, and it's the broken system. And personally, what I like about community care is I actually, and I hate to say this because I would love to be more supportive of the VA, but I prefer, especially for very serious things. Like I had a I had a cervical spine fusion, with my spinal cord. I was very happy to be sent to a neurosurgeon in the private sector versus a neurosurgeon at the VA. But again, you shouldn't have to. I shouldn't feel that way. They should have just as good as surgeons, just as good a care. But there's that distrust, because if you can't even get the billing part right, then I don't know who you're hiring to work on my spinal cord, right? So there's that. But yeah, it's again, it's a broken system. It needs to. There's a lot of training that needs to be done. There's a lot of consistency issues there. And really what happens is it falls on the backs of the veterans.
You're exactly right. When we come back from this break, I'll talk about one part of it that actually works perfectly, and the other pieces of it should be modeled after this. We'll be right back with veteran Jeremy Harrell.
Introducing Worldview Tube Vault. Over 35 years of radio broadcasts, television programs, documentaries, and ebooks. Plus, Worldviewpedia, our powerful search engine for instant worldview and Bible research. Join for as little as $7.99 a month. And now, Vault members get something brand new, courses. Our very first course is here, The Book of Revelation with Brannon House. 53 in-depth lessons, complete with overview quizzes, walking you verse by verse through one of the most important books in Scripture. Getting started is simple. Go to worldviewtube.com/vault and join today. Already a member? Visit worldviewtube.com, click the person icon in the top right, and log in. Then hover over Vault in the menu and select Courses. That's it. You're in. Join WorldviewTube Vault today at worldviewtube.com/vault.
I know it's only because of that. It's because I tried every other thing that I could possibly imagine and failed miserably, and rightfully so. And so I started doing it this way, the way that it's prescribed in here. Things started going a different path, and I started to become a different man, a better father, a better leader. And the desire to serve something bigger than myself. And so I'm forever indebted to these words and just thankful that we have a God like that to serve.
Welcome back to the Rob Maynard Show. It's Whistleblower Wednesday. My guest is once again combat veteran and disabled veteran Jeremy Harrell, who has been a victim of a weaponized inspector general at the VA and Department of Justice system that went after him for the volunteer work that he was doing in an unpaid capacity because of his disability rating. And Jeremy, that was a clip of you talking about the Bible and about God and your experiences. But before we dive into that, let me say one thing about community care. There's one aspect that the VA has right, and that is the urgent care capability. There's no reason I have an urgent care within a mile of my house that I can go to. I go there. I don't have to ask anybody permission. They take my VA card. It's done. They can give me a limited number of days of medication if I need it, and refer me on, if need be, back to the VA facility, and I never have a problem with it. That should be happening for emergency rooms.
Yes.
It should be happening for regular community care. I ought to be able to take a list of approved providers and call and get an appointment and have priority for that appointment, and the bill gets sent to the VA. It's as simple as that, folks. If we can do it for urgent care, we can do it for the rest of it. So there is some good that's going on. We need to fix the rest of it, and that's what that access Veterans Access Bill is about, and some other bills that Mark Lucas and the team are working on.
One other thing President Trump implemented is from the mental health side. Any veteran who is in a mental health crisis can go to any ER nearest them. And that will all be covered. It will all be free of charge. They no longer have to go to their nearest VA or even call and get approval in any circumstance. So, we want to thank President Trump for, opening that up, because that's critical. So that's another good thing. So there's two good things that we've uncovered.
Absolutely. I mean, and they all come from Trump administrations.
Absolutely.
Believe it or not. Where's everybody else? Well, they're part of the team bureaucracy. We're part of Team America.
That's right.
And we're going to try to fix it no matter what the bureaucracy says. So, bureaucracy, what specifically about your disability rating opened the door for you to be investigated, prosecuted, convicted, and sent to prison? What's the specific issue there involved in that? Because I'm disabled. I have a disability rating, and I work.
Yeah, so I think the biggest bureaucracy there is that nobody can really define the definition between volunteer and work. The government is, well, here's the reality, is they don't want to define it. They think what I was doing was work, but what I was doing was volunteering. The Department of Labor's definition is what we brought up in trial, because that's really the closest definition we have. And it's doing something for it's doing a task for compensation, essentially. But I was never getting any kind of compensation. And so then the government's theory was, well, you were doing substantial gainful activity, but that's not the law. That's not, you know, they just manipulated it, right, so that they could get the conviction. But they never, when we asked the agent when he was on the stand, what is the VA's definition of work? He didn't have one. I mean, he said that we don't have one. And I thought, well, that's going to be the nail in the coffin, but it wasn't. And basically what they did is, instead of, you know, looking at the actual laws and the regulations in the 38 CFR, which is the VA regulations part 3 and 4, where it doesn't even mention volunteering at all. Mm-hmm. Basically, because I was successful, they used that to override any actual definition of volunteer and work. So, for example, the VA expert on the stand, who was a rater, 12 years experience at the VA, my attorney asked, if Mr. Harrell was a volunteer for 8 hours a day at the animal shelter, would this have been an issue? And the rater said, no, we likely wouldn't have looked into it. Well, what's the difference? If I volunteered at the animal shelter for 8 hours, or if I help veterans for 8 hours a day, well, the issue is because that really never was the problem. If I was at an animal shelter, they'd prefer that, because I wouldn't uncover all the issues within the government and how we're not taking care of veterans. I wouldn't have been a voice on Fox and CNN about what we need to fix in this country, but they can't say that. And so the issue wasn't the issue, but what they really try to nail it down is that, yes, I wasn't getting paid, but they think I could have gotten paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to do the work. But again, that's a coulda, woulda, shoulda. And I was always under the impression that in court, facts matter. But in my case, specifically for me on my side of the fence, it was about theory, and it was about perception. And it was about, how many times the prosecutor said, highly successful founder and CEO, you know, that's all he kept saying. The average salary of CEO for a nonprofit our size in the country was $250,000. I don't know where he gets that number at. I mean, maybe Wounded Warrior Project or something like that, but we're nowhere near the size.
Or those
of
fake nonprofits at the Leering Centers, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and the reality is there was never a check on the table for me. And the point is this was therapeutic for me. I didn't do it for money. And in fact, the way that it scaled, and here's where the faith part comes in. And I was told by the agent that faith will not save me in court. My response to that was, faith already saved me. But the point is, God's shown favor to the organization. I mean, people are, you know, my friends of mine who are entrepreneurs and successful business owners say, you're the only guy I know who never tried to scale that scaled anyway. right? And and it was just because we were doing the right thing for the right reasons, and veterans told their friends, and you know how that goes in the veteran community. You can I told the VA this when they asked me to be, and by the way, they asked me to be a consultant to their executive leadership team to help build their trust scores because their trust scores were low.
Is this before they sent you to prison?
This is right before they asked me to come in and chair a committee and invite veterans to sit on that committee, and we would meet at the VA hospital, and they wanted me to build their trust scores. And so I did that. I didn't charge them to do that, right? And they have tons of money, you know, me trying to be a good partner. We were doing that, and then also they were coming over to our headquarters and doing town halls because they felt like veterans would more likely come to our headquarters than to the hospital. At one point, they were doing flu shots out of our headquarters. I mean, I can't imagine how much more partnership that we could have had. But I told the VA, going back to the word of mouth, I said, you know, you can make all the stress balls and pill boxes in the world, but veterans respond to word of mouth. And and so they're like, this is why we want you to help us. And so matter of fact, the day that the indictment come down, the director of the VA hospital in Louisville, Kentucky, was in my headquarters doing a mental health graduation for one of their programs. So how's that for a contradiction? Yeah.
It's I chuckle only because it's irony and sarcasm.
I mean, I laugh too. Yeah. I laugh too because it's like a bad dream, you know?
Humor is good therapy too. even when it's bad humor. Okay, we got some questions in the live audience. Go ahead, Joe. Yeah. Let's take some of those.
All right. We have Zach, sir.
Yes. How a person gets a VA benefits, how long it takes?
You want me to answer that? Or?
Yeah. Go ahead, Jeremy. What's your experience with?
So I think that part is getting a little better because of technology. When I first got rated back in 2010, it took me almost 2 years. But now I think they're trying to do it within 120 days. I think that's the goal. And I think for most cases, depending on, how many claims that you make and how complex they are, that's very a reasonable amount of time. And of course, if you have a VSO, which is a veteran service officer, or some sort of advocate alongside of you, things can go much quicker. But I think they're getting better at that part.
Yeah, and in 2012, it took me about 19 months, I think. But I had a big claim, you know, I had 3 volumes of medical record and all that stuff, and had some help with the VSO. But it was getting shorter. And folks, if you're still on active duty, there is a way to file your disability paperwork before you leave active duty now. So check into that. That way you can have a rating on discharge, at least a minimal one, and then go from there. The other thing I would say about that is that it very rarely does somebody come out and get a rating over 50 or 60% right out of the gate. Most people are in the 30s to 60 from what my experience. This is just my experience, unless they're, completely mobile, those kind of things. Some of these ratings happen over time, and those kind of things. So it's something that the system is really was not originally designed to be speedy for some reason. You would think it would have been, but it wasn't. They've been working to fix it a lot. So that opening clip there, you were talking about God and the Bible. I'm assuming that's post prison time. Is that correct?
No, that's actually, that's actually an interview I did. Actually, what's interesting is they used that interview is actually a very long interview. They used part of that. They played that in trial, certain pieces, obviously but they didn't play that part. Imagine that, but so I did that. I think it was maybe, 2019, 2020, maybe. Yeah, I think it was 2020 because for most of it, we had to wear a mask before and after, the pre-show and after the show. But that was around that time frame.
Yeah, so I guess it's because you were 70% and you had this thing about employability as part of your specific rating. Is that right? Is that why they were able to come after you for this?
Yeah, so the initial complaint they said was anonymous in December of 2021, saying, and it is in discovery. Now, understand that the investigation started several months before the initial complaint came in, the anonymous complaint. But it said that somebody thought that I was living too good to be on disability, and they thought I was taking money from my organization. Well, unbeknownst to me, there was a financial forensic audit performed, and they found that I didn't take anything, nothing, right? And so, but here's the part that's really strange is they didn't close the case. Instead, they decided to look at a new theory. So then they started digging into the benefits side. They started digging into the organization. And then I guess they decided, well, wait a minute. This guy's successful. This guy's on TV. And this guy's, you know, making a lot of headway. And he's winning these awards. But he's supposed to be unemployable. Here's the problem is, unemployable doesn't mean that that you don't have a brain, that you can't be productive, that you can't do good in the world. And I think it's a terrible precedent to set to expect a veteran to be unemployable, that he must sit in his home and do nothing. Yeah. And in fact, you know, I'm at this point, I think unemployability should probably go away. I think if someone is considered unable to work, they should just move to the 100% scheduler. Right. I mean, I just think that's a gray area, because if they would have told me, I'm going to give you this rating and you're going to be permanent and totally disabled. But here's what you can't do. You can't go and do anything. You can't volunteer to do, you know, that I would have said, you know, go kick rocks with flip-flops on. I wouldn't have done that, but they didn't say that. In fact, they said, Mr. Harrell, your disability is static, meaning it will not likely improve. You will get no future exams. Go try to live your life.
Yeah.
And so I had a choice. I could have suffered on the couch, or I could suffer with other veterans and help them in as much as I can. And so I decided to do the later. I didn't want to just sit at home and get a government check. And in reality, I felt like I was still earning it by going out and being part of the solution. And you would think that that would be celebrated. But no, it wasn't. And so the difference was, is they said that the way that they give you unemployability, they're saying, well, you're 70%, but because of your disability, you can't work. So we're going to give you the 100% rate. But in reality, what a lot of veterans and a lot of people don't understand is you are allowed to make some money. You can make up to the poverty threshold, depending on your family size and wherever you live. Because my lawyer brought up in trial, he said, if Mr. Harrell made minimum wage in Kentucky, and I think for my family size, the poverty threshold was like 32,000. If he worked as a greeter at Walmart for 80 hours, would this be a problem? And the VA rater says no.
Oh, my
God.
And
goodness. He says, yeah, I mean, it's in the transcript. I've showed this to everybody. He says no. So my lawyer says, well, what's the problem with the guy? He doesn't take anything and he doesn't do 80 hours. It's you can't make this stuff.
What was their answer before we go to this break?
They didn't have one.
Yeah.
They moved on. He didn't. I mean, he didn't answer and he didn't ask any more questions. My attorney felt like that was it. What can you say?
Yeah.
But that still wasn't enough to convince a jury for a not guilty verdict.
Interesting. Well, we got to take another break. When we come back, we'll hear a letter from President Trump read by Ed Martin at the big Weaponization Watch gala that happened a few weeks ago, thanks to Cynthia Hughes, the organizer of Weaponization Watch, that's doing a lot of good work for all you guys. We'll be right back with Jeremy Harrell.
You woke up with a sore throat and a low-grade fever. You know you are getting sick, so here's your choices. You can get sicker and miss work, Try to see a doctor this week or sit hours in a crowded waiting room at urgent care.
I have a smarter option for you. Open your medical emergency kit. Match your symptoms to doctor-recommended prescription in your booklet and take the right meds now and get well faster.
This is not a first aid kit. It's like having an urgent care in your home. It includes doctor-prescribed medications to treat over 39 medical issues like respiratory infections, strep throat, pneumonia, UTIs, and more.
No waiting to see the doctor and no standing in line at the pharmacy. It's right here.
Every home should have at least one medical emergency kit, and here's how to order.
Go to worldviewhealthcare.com. Your kit to treat dozens of common and serious illnesses is rushed to your door. worldviewhealthcare.com. That's worldviewhealthcare.com.
The emergency kit available at worldviewhealthcare.com. Make sure you don't have to go to urgent care. I got pneumonia. I didn't have to go. I took this last year. Stayed at home. Went to bed.
My family, I'm grateful to have a chance to read it. We invited him, of course, to come tonight, and then it was a long shot, and he couldn't come. But he sent this letter. He sent my best wishes to those attending the Spring New America Dinner hosted by Weaponization Watch right here in Washington, D.C., near the White House. For 250 glorious years, the rule of law and the blessings of freedom have stood as the bedrock of our republic and the fount of our agreements. Since I returned into office as president, I have worked tirelessly to restore our justice system, uphold law and order, and eliminate threats to our freedom. My administration has ended the era of lawlessness and the weaponization of the Department of Justice, and we have reclaimed our constitutional heritage. Under my leadership, we're entering a new golden age, one that remains firmly rooted in respect for our laws, reference for our Constitution, and an unwavering commitment to the eternal truths that have guided our nation for 2.5 centuries. May God bless you, and may God bless all in attendance, and may He continue to bless the United States of America. Donald J. Trump.
Welcome back to the Rob Maynard Show. We're live on Worldview Tube and our X Spaces simulcast. And my guest is veteran Jeremy Harrell, who was a victim of the weaponized DOJ and Veterans Affairs Department Inspector General just for operating a veterans nonprofit that helps people deal with their wounds of war, essentially. Jeremy, that was a letter being read by U.S. Pardon Attorney Ed Martin, a letter from President Trump to the Weaponization Watch Gala, Strength of America, that Cynthia Hughes organized. And she is the primary operator of weaponizationwatch.org, folks. And you should go there and make a donation, too, in addition to Jeremy's organization, because they're a nonprofit. And it takes dollars to do this stuff. Jeremy, how did you feel about that? I bet that room was full of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that are victims of weaponization and their families.
Yeah, you know, I really appreciate the president's words. And you know, what's great about this president is they're not just words. Yeah. Not only is he able to get a speech out, but he actually stands by what he says. And Cynthia, I can't say enough good about her. She's a brilliant woman. She's a vicious advocate. I've never seen anything like her. And brilliant in the way that she took the some of the best attorneys in the nation and put them in a room with some of the biggest victims of weaponization in the nation, and allowed us to commiserate and share our stories with them in a place where we likely would never have been able to do that. And so we were able to be heard, and we were able to get our stories out to people who can do something about it. And I appreciate that. But I'm thankful, you know, to have a president who, unfortunately, he's experienced this, and he knows how this feels and how it affects his family. And his son, Eric Trump, talks a lot about it in his book, Under Siege, and how they were all debanked and how it affected the whole family. And I think that's why he's so adamant about doing what he can to fix it. And I'm hopeful to have him in office. And as I navigate this, because it's at the point now where it's kind of out of my hands. And so, you know, I'm just thankful that he's serious about, you know, making sure that this ends during his administration.
Absolutely. And I know you're on the pardon list for the Pardon 250 effort that's going on there. We've got some more questions in the audience. Let's try to take those before we get to the end of the show. Sure. Go ahead, Shell.
We have Liz, sir.
Thank you, Michelle. Good afternoon, Colonel Manus. Jeremy, first I want to say thank you for what you do. Mm. I am a Marine Corps veteran. Mm. And I am still fighting with the VA because they've lost part of my records when I was in the Marine Corps, because I was in 1979 to 1983. And what I do have, you can't read because it was on microfiche. Mm. But can you sue these idiots for falsely bringing false claims? Because, I mean, basically they slandered you by saying that you were taking money from your organization that you did not take. And why are you not 100%? That's my other big question. I also have PTSD. I still can't get through the system. I'm still fighting it. But you, as a proven combat veteran, certainly going through what you've gone through should be 100%. And I don't mean to be emotional, but the biggest thing you do for veterans is you have ears and you're listening to them. And veterans do better with veterans. And that's a proven fact. We see it on X all the time. And that's one of the reasons I come to the Colonel Show as a fellow veteran. Thank you.
Yeah, well, my response is, you know, the VA has done a lot of studies and has proven that volunteerism does mitigate symptoms. They've done their own studies, so it is bizarre. But I will say that as far as me being 100%, I will say that since I've been released from federal prison, they have increased my disability three times. I'm currently sitting at 90%, and I have some claims that are in process. As far as suing the VA, because I'm not an attorney, I don't know what that looks like, to be honest with you. I'm still fighting this other battle currently. I have to save that one for another day. But I appreciate your service, and it's okay to be emotional. I'm emotional often because we both understand what it looks like to be in front of one another when we're trying to navigate this challenge. I mean, I tell veterans all the time, the second we walk out of our front door, 93% of people won't understand us. And so that's why we got to have each other. And that's why we got to surround ourselves with like-minded people who understand the struggle that we have. So I hope you find your records. I will say that when the VA can't find your records, they do have a duty to assist. That means that you can submit other evidence, buddy statements, even your own statement, and they have to consider those. So I hope that helps you.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jeremy. I appreciate that. Thanks for the question, Liz. It's okay, folks. It's okay to be emotional about this. Yes. I mean, most people, all of us have given everything we've had in our youth, especially to the country. Most of the time when you're talking about these situations and everything. Before I let you go, and folks, Jeremy is going to be in the after show on X Spaces simulcast. I can't be there today, but he is going to come into that to answer more questions and everything. But obviously, you're a Christian, my friend. You're actually a chaplain, I think, in the Franklin Graham organization, Billy Graham organization for crisis response. I just wondered, while you were serving in prison, how did you approach that from a Christian perspective? I know you witnessed to non-Christians while you were in there, right?
Yeah. So actually the day that I self-surrendered to prison and I went through, you have to go to the main prison. I was in a satellite camp next door. So I go to the main prison, I get processed, and I went over to the satellite camp. And before I ever made it to my bunk, there were other inmates there who, and here's the funny thing. They have a knack for getting information. They know who's coming. And because my story in my case was, highly, publicized, folks knew I was coming and they knew my background. And so there were people coming up and saying, Hey, Jeremy, I know that you're a chaplain and, we don't have a chaplain here at this facility. And we were wondering if you would do Sunday services. And so while I was there, that was primarily what I did. I did Sunday service. In fact, my last sermon was Mother's Day of 2025. And then I held Bible studies three times a week. And then, of course, I talked to men and mentored men who have never had anybody sit down with them and talk to them about, it could be about God, it could be about life. But that's primarily what I did there. I just try to utilize that time. I try to share the gospel. I tried to take advantage of an opportunity that God gave me, even though I didn't like it, even though I would have preferred to go home at night. And I even prayed that. I said, Lord, don't get me wrong. I would have done this. I would have loved to go home at night though. But you know, we got to take advantage of every opportunity to share the gospel. And that was a good place to do it. And I will say that out of 200 inmates at that camp, we had a congregation of 48. And that's not bad for a prison. But the yeah. Lord, even in that place, he got me through it, and he gave me an opportunity to you know, bring honor and glory to him. So absolutely. That's what I did. Yeah.
God is good, my friend. God is good all the time.
He is good. Absolutely.
God bless you. I appreciate that. Tell folks you're a strategic advisor now for the Veterans Club, yes. Incorporated. We did get that up on the Chiron.
Yeah.
Tell folks how they can find the club and you right now before I let you go real quick.
Yeah. So you can find us veteransclubinc.org. And of course you can find us on all social media platforms. And I just opened up an advisory business, started an LLC. I will be doing crisis management, leadership under pressure. Obviously, I have a lot of experience in that now. I never wanted it, but I have it, and I'd like to share it with other leaders. It ain't the pretty stuff. It ain't the motivational stuff. It's the stuff that we don't want to deal with, but we have to. So if anybody's in the market for that, I'd be willing to help you.
Absolutely, my friend. Absolutely. Thank you very much. God bless you.
And, yes, sir. Thank you.
We're with you in this fight. All America is.
Thank you, sir.
All right, folks. Tomorrow, Truth Thursday, another weaponization victim. Set of victims. Actually, we're going to talk to one of these three individuals. Michael Castellaro will be with us to talk about how his company was attacked and dismantled, hundreds of millions of dollars, I think, and it hurt the little guys. I'll see you then.